Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find almost halfway down Daf Yud Beis, 19 lines from the top. The Mishnah. Metzias benoi uvitoi haktanim. The found articles on the part of a person's son or daughter that are minors. In other words, one's young children, son or daughter, that are below the bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah age, found an item. Metzias avdoi v'shivchos v'aknanim, the found items on the part of a person's heathen slaves or bond maids. Metzias ishto, or one's wife found something. Hare elu shelo, they belong to the balabayas, the father, the husband, the master. Metzias beno uvito hagdolim, articles found by one's adult children. Metzias avdo v'shipchosu evrim, articles found by his Jewish servant or bondmaid. Metzias ishto shegirsha, a divorced woman. Afal pi shelo nosan ksuba, even if the husband has not yet paid her the ksuba, hare elu shelahen, the found item remains with them, those that found it. Before we continue into the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side of the Gemara, the Nosei, which reads Metzias Koton Li'oviv. The diamond that you see is explained under our Mivneh heading, the structural note, Deos Beferush Koton, different opinions as to what the word Koton refers to, that in the Mishnah you saw, it said, Demetziosai Le'aviv, the found item on the part of a Koton goes to the father. You might be wondering, well, isn't it obvious what a Koton is? So you will see in the course of the Gemara, Shmuel takes the approach that a koton is, as the word implies, a minor. On the fourth line from the top of Amud Beis, Reb Chiya bar Abba appears, also with a diamond, and explains that the terms godol and koton are not to be taken literally, but rather the term adult, godol, is a reference to a child that is... I should say that you can have an adult child, but yet he is dependent on his father for support. He is classified as a koton, as a minor, and conversely, a minor that's independent, he is classified as a godel. So that the terms godel and koton are not chronological definitions, but they are, or I should say, they are not defined by chronological factors, but rather by financial factors. Now the Gemara. Omar Shmuel. Mipnei ma omru metzias koton la'aviv. Why have the rabbis taught that the found article by a person's minor child goes to the father? Answer. Shebisho shemoitza, at the moment that the child finds it, meritza etzel aviv. V'eino ma'achir biyado. He immediately runs with it to his father and doesn't tarry with it in his own hands. The Gemara now raises a question. You'll notice we have a long question. Lememra, the Sovar Shmuel Koton Les Le Zechio Lenavshe Midoraisa, is this suggesting to us that according to Shmuel, a Koton, a minor, doesn't have any legal sense of possession of items from the Torah perspective. the Hotanya, but we have a Tanaic source that suggests to the contrary. This Tanaic source deals with the topic of Leket. Leket is the name of one of the tithes that go to the poor. And you will find Leket in the case of one harvesting a field. And in harvesting, certain sheaves, let's say, fall by the wayside, without getting into strict legal definitions. But those sheaves that fall by the wayside during the harvesting process are to remain in their place for the poor to come and collect. So, with that in mind, we now continue with the source. Hasocher Sapoel, one who hires a worker to harvest his field. Yelokate Benoy Achrov, the son of this worker, has the right to collect the leket. The leket is the tithe that's destined to the poor. If someone is hired not simply as a worker, but lemechsa l'shlishu raviya, he is granted a percentage, half, a third, or a quarter of the harvest. And as such, the father of the child who has gained a percentage holding of the harvest, lo yilake benoy achrov, the son is not to collect the leket. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, Beinkach ubeinkach yilake benoy v'ishto achrov. Whether the father is classified as a simple worker, or he is in possession of a portion of the field, the son has a right to collect the leket. Before we go further, let us take a look at Rashi for some further embellishment of these points. Yilake beno achrov, the Rashi we're looking at is just a couple lines down from here. Muter luvnoi shapoyel im onihu, it is permissible for the son of a worker, if he is poor, lilkoit achar oviv es leket hanosher, for the son of that worker to collect the fallen leket. Avalim kibel hapoyel es hasoda lemechsa l'shlish ruvia, oshirhu, if the worker arrangement is such that he has a percentage of the field, of the harvest, half, a third, or a quarter, he is classified as an osher. An osher means a man of means, of wealth. Veharehu kibal habayis basodezeh. And that worker is viewed in halachic terms as an owner of the field. The owner of fields, obviously, are not entitled to take the leket. Not only that, according to the Tanakhama, the son of such a worker that has the field with the mechsa shlishu raviya arrangement is not to collect the leket, because the leket that he gathers will go to his father. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, said whether the father is classified as an oshir or an oni, the son has a right to collect the leket, and he will keep it for himself. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Omar Shmuel, Haloch Rabbi Yossi. And Shmuel rules like Rabbi Yossi, that the son, in effect, is a separate entity that gains possession of the leket for himself. If you say, take the approach that a katan has possession of items for himself as an independent entity from a Torah perspective, when he is harvesting, when he's, I should say, gathering the leket, the tithe that's destined for the poor, lenafshei komalaket, he is gathering it for himself as an independent entity. The father will eventually get it from the son. In other words, it's not an automatic collection of leket on the part of the father. The son is an independent entity, and he has zechia lenafshe, has his own power of possession. And lo iyam is katan lesle zechia lenafshe. If you're going to take the approach that the katan, the minor, doesn't have his independent possession, but as soon as he picks things up, it goes immediately to the father. Well, then ki komalake, when he is harvesting the leket, lo'aviv komalake, he's in effect harvesting or gathering the leket for his father, vavua ashirhu, and the father who received the field for the shlish or avia or mechsa arrangement, is an ashir, is considered someone not entitled to receive it, as he's classified as a man of means. Amai ishto uvno malakin achrav, why would Shmuel rule like Rabbi Yossi that says that Beno and Ishto can collect the leket following their husband, father, who has a field, Lumechso Shish Ravia? So the opening of the Gemara, which featured Shmuel saying that the Metzias cotton goes to the father because the child doesn't have his own sense of ownership, but rather as soon as he picks it up, he's picking it up and brings it to the father. And as Rashi, we should have read the Rashi earlier, but Rashi said, Meritzo Eitzel Oviv, Hilkoch Kishimagbia, Rashi says, when he picks it up, Litzurich Oviv Igbia, picked it up for his father. Well, if that's the case, then how could Shmuel rule like Rabbi Yossi that the Beno can harvest the leket when the father is an oshir? The Gemara answers, Shmuel, who said regarding the mitzia goes to the father, Taimo detona didon kaomar, he is explaining the rationale behind our Mishnah. Why is mitzias katan le'oviv? Filei lo svirole, but Shmuel himself doesn't hold by that. Rather, according to Shmuel himself, he would say that the Metzias Koton is le'atzmo, is something he is entitled to keep. And now we ask a question, and we have a triangle marking, and on the side of the Gemara you can see the Mivneh heading, Hezberim le'Rabbi Yossi, Loma Koton Benkach u'Benkach locate. We're now going to focus on the Tana Rabbi Yossi that we saw above in the Leket source. And now, question. V'sova Rabbi Yossi katan is lei zechiyah midoraisa? Is it accurate to say that Rabbi Yossi holds that a minor does have independent possession from a Torah perspective? V'hotnan. We have the following source, which reads, Mitzias cheri shoyte v'katan, an article found by a deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor, yesh bohen mishum gezel mitnei darkei shalom. It would be prohibited to swipe from one of these inepts the article that they found because it would be a disturbance to communal peace. Darkei shalom, for the preservation of tranquility in the amongst the people, we say don't steal from them. Rabbi Yossi Yomer Gezel Gomer. Rabbi Yossi says it's full-fledged theft, stealing from them. They are found article. The Omar Rav Chisda Gezel Gomer Midivrehem. And Rav Chisda says, when Rabbi Yossi says Gezel Gomer, full-fledged theft, it's only on a rabbinic level. Nafka Mina Lotzia B'dayonim. The difference between the Tanakamu says Gezel Mipnei Darkei Shalom versus Gezel Gomer, can we expect the court to intervene to extract the item taken away from these people? What's the point, though? What do we want to emphasize? According to Rabbi Yossi, it would appear here that the possession of a found item on the part of a katan is mi divrayim, is only rabbinic. Whereas above, Rabbi Yossi seemed to indicate that the katan has a Torah right to collect the leket, indicating he has possession of items on a Torah level. Elo Omar Abaye. Asu'uha kemi shehochu ba nemushas. Abaye explains that the possession or the rights of a katan to the leket that Rabbi Yossi was speaking about is a phenomenon of how we view the presence of the katan. What is meant by kemi shehochu ba nemushas? So the Mishnah in Maseches Peah that Rashi cites tells us that at a certain point the leket tithe is permissible for the general public to gather. That is, we'll say, late in the harvesting season when the last of the poor have already passed through the field. At that late point, they are, by the way, called the nemushos. At that point, that the last of the poor have passed through the field, it's then available to the general public because the community of poor no longer expect to find any leket there. It's a mindset of the, we'll say, the community of the poor, that when it's late in the season and they realize that any of their poor colleagues have passed through the field, they don't expect to find any leket. So they have what Rashi calls maschu detayu. They have removed their minds. They have disconnected themselves from any association with the leket. So that with a hired worker who has children, the rest of the aniyim don't expect to collect any leket. Let's continue in the Gemara. The aniyim gufayu maschi datayu. The poor themselves have disconnected themselves from gathering the leket in that situation. Savri, they figure, brei deheich malakti lei. The son of the worker, he's collecting the leket. We don't have any expectations of getting the leket. So that, as far as Abaye is concerned, the opinion of Rabbi Yossi regarding the child's rights to the leket is not a reflection of Rabbi Yossi holding that a katan has zechiya midoraisa. Rather, the katan has a right to the leket simply because it's not expected or available to the aniyim anymore by virtue of their own having disconnected themselves from it. And you can see this in Rashi on the last of the narrow lines, Elo Omar Abai Rabbi Yossi Nami Ketana Didon Svira Lei. Unlike Shmuel's approach, Abai is saying that Rabbi Yossi holds, like our Tana, that a katan doesn't have zechiyah. He doesn't have a sense of his own ownership of items. As far as how is it that he is allowed to collect the leket, we explained that's a function of the aniyim themselves being misyayish from the leket. As we continue with Rav Ado Bar Matana, he raises a question on Abaye's approach. According to Abaye, we have, in effect, set up a situation that, for lack of better terms, we'll say scares off the poor. We've set up a situation creating a sense of yeush, almost proactively creating a sense of yeush on the part of the poor. In other words, by allowing a worker's son to harvest, so that causes the aniyim to give up hope on their getting the leket. So in that spirit, Omar Le Rav Ada Bar Matana Labaye, V'chin Mutar L'Odom L'Harbitz Ari B'soch Sodeu Kedei Sheyiru Aniyim V'Yivruchu, would one be allowed to have a lion lie in his field so as to scare away the poor and thereby be misyayish from the leket, give up hope on their getting the leket? After all, they've got this lion in the field. It would be too risky to try to get the leket, so that would chase away the aniyim from the field. Are we not doing the same thing by allowing the son of the worker to collect the leket? Elo Omar Rava. So now we have Rava's approach to understanding how is it that the halacha accepts a child of a worker to collect the leket. How does Rabbi Yossi rule that the child can collect the leket? So the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. Asu she'enoi zoiche kezoiche. In order to appreciate that phrase, we glance at Rashi at the top line. Asu es she'enoi zoiche kezoiche. Afalpi she'en lekotan zichia b'mokom acher. Even though in other areas of halacha, the kotan, the minor, doesn't have his own possession, independent possession of items. Kan asauhu kezoiche. Here, we have made it such that he is like one who has independent rights, independent possession, independent ownership of the leket. My taima, why is that? Niyam gufayu nicha lehu. The poor, the community of the poor themselves are happy with this arrangement. It's pleasing to them. Ki hechi techi agru l'didhu, so that when they are hired to work, to harvest people's fields, nilkait banayhu basrayhu, their own children will then have a right to collect the leket following them. Upliga adarav chia bar abba. Rashi points out, and we made a note of this in our margin on Omid Aleph, that Shmuel, that explained the reason of the Mishnah as why the miner's found item goes to the father, based on that a cotton has no independent ownership. That approach in explaining the Mishnah is different than Reb Chiya Bar Abba's approach in explaining the Mishnah. The Omar Reb Chiya Bar Abba, we continue in the Gemara, and that's why we have this diamond base in contrast to Shmuel. Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Omar Reb Yochanan says, Lo Godol Godol Mamish. The term in the Mishnah Godol, where it said, Metzias Beno Uvito HaGedoylim. That word, Gedoylim, or Godol in the singular, that you see in the Mishnah, doesn't mean literally an adult child. V'lo Koton, Koton Mamish. Nor does the term Koton indicate a minor. Ela Godol V'samuch Al Shulchan Aviv. If a person has a child, albeit he is adult, but he is still a dependent, relies upon his father's table, meaning his father continues to support him. Zehu Koton. He is called Beno Koton. The father will benefit from the found object. And the consideration here is so as to avoid a feeling of disdain, of hate. After all, if the father is supporting, laying out money for the child, the father expects to get something in return as well. In all due respect to altruism, there are stronger considerations in life. So that if the father is laying out money to support his child, he would like to benefit from income that child reaps. And in this case, the found item that the child finds, even though, as we said, he's an adult child, but his father is supporting him, the father expects to get that in return for his supporting the son. Katan v'ena somach al shulchan aviv, a minor that is independent, he's not being supported by his father. Zehu Gadol. That is one that the Mishnah would classify as a Gadol. And he has independent rights, independent ownership rights to found articles. So as you can see, Reb Chiya Bar Abba's approach to explaining that the Mishnah is quite different than that of Shmuel. Metzias avdoi v'shivchasoi ho'ivrim harei hu shel atzmon. We saw in the Mishnah that once Jewish servants and bondmaids, their found items, they keep for themselves. The Gemara asks, Amai, why is that the case? Lo yehei ela poyel, the Eved Ivri, the Jewish bond, the Jewish servant, shouldn't have any greater strength than a worker. V'tanya, and we have a Tanaic source that deals with workers, and it says Metzias poyel liatzmo, articles found by a poyel, he is able to keep for himself. Amed v'amurim, under what circumstances? Bizman she'omar lo, provided that he was hired with very specific tasks in mind, where the Balabayas said to him, Nakesh imi hayom, ador imi hayom, weed my field today, or till my field today, avol. Omar lo ase imi malocha hayom, if a person was hired with general expectations, do work for me, without specifying which work, mitziyosu labalabayas, found articles, in that case, on the part of the worker, go to the owner. A servant, a Jewish servant, is in service of his master without specific malachas in mind. He is parallel to the case of the worker that was hired for general work purposes. And you can see in this Tanaic source that the found items go to the Balabayas, to the master, to the owner, to the one who hired them. So why does our Mishnah say that the found articles of an Eved Ivri are items he can keep for himself? The double underline marking that you see is a series marking, and we've explained on the side of the Gemara, these are Tshuvos, answers, Liyashev HaMishnah MaBraisa, to resolve our Mishnah with this Braisa. So we continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Omar Rav Yochanan, Hacha, in our Mishnah, Be'eved Noikev Margolius Askinan. He's a Jewish servant who actually has a specific task. He is in service of his master for the purpose of being Noikev Margolius. Literally, would be making holes in pearls. You can say is a very highly talented task or role that he performs, someone like a diamond cutter. Shein Raboy, the Gemara says, Shein Raboy Roitze L'Shanoisil Moch Acheres. In that case, the master doesn't want that servant doing anything else. He doesn't want him for general work purposes that would include picking up found articles and delivering them to the master. Let us take a look at the Rashi. She'ein Raboy Roitze L'shanoso, the Rashi that we're looking at is just a few lines up from here. Hilkoch, since the master doesn't want him doing anything else, Hilkoch lo nichole she'agbiyo lo metziyo, the master isn't happy with the picking up of the found article. And found item that would have the same value as the amount of time that he's taking off from his highly professional craft is very unlikely. Therefore, if an Eved, that's a Noikev Margolius, happens to find something, Shelohu, he will keep it, v'yishalim l'rabo schar bitulo, and he'll have to compensate the master for the amount of time that he took off from his highly valuable work. So according to Rav Chiya Bar Abba, the Eved Ivri in the Mishnah is a reference to a very specific situation where he's a servant working in a highly respected or highly professional area where the master is not interested in getting the found articles from that kind of servant. Rava Omar, the case of the Mishnah where we say that the Eved keeps the found article, is b'magbia mitzia im malachto askinon. The Jewish servant there isn't taking off any time from his service while he is doing what he is doing, his malacha. He simultaneously picks up the unowned found item, and that's why he is able to keep it for himself. It's not at the expense of the Jewish owner whatsoever. Rav Papa Omar, the Rav Papa comes to explain the case of the worker, the poyel, delivering the found item to the balabayas. Kagon shesachroi lelakate mitzias. That's a very unique situation of a worker that's hired to collect found articles. It's only because of that arrangement that the balabayas gets the found article, and that's not the case. That's not the arrangement with an Eved Ivri. And therefore, the Mishnah that speaks of an Eved Ivri keeping the found article, that's understandable in and of itself. The Eved Ivri, don't forget, is a Jewish individual that's in service of a master. But he's a full-fledged, regular Jew, and hence items that he finds he's entitled to keep. As far as the worker described above that's hired from Malacha and the found items going to the Balabais, because he was hired for that, for gathering found items. You might ask, well, how do you have that? You know, found items are, is almost as the name implies, something that you happened to find, you chanced upon it. How can you imagine something being hired for that? So the Gemara is sensitive to that, and it says, v'hechi dami. How do you have a case of someone hired to gather found items? The Gemara answers, the akfi agma bekavri. The agam is a pond or a lake that happened to overflow, and in its overflow, fish were washed up on the shore of the lake, and those fish are unowned. And they're now available for the picking, for collecting them. And in a case like that, we can understand someone being hired for the purpose of gathering found items. And as we said before, that's what the Tanaic source above dealing with the worker was describing. The Gemara continues, and before we get into the text, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, which reads, Lahazbir Hadikotani, we're here to explain that which was taught in the Mishnah Shivcha Mitziyasa Liatzma. A Hebrew bondmaid keeps items she found. Hechi Domi, what are the circumstances? Our note continues, E Aisi Shtei Cyrus Kvar Einena Shivcha. If she's reached the age of puberty where she's produced two pubic hairs, at that point, she's approximately 12 years of age, she is no longer going to be called a shivcha. The Torah declares that a girl that was sold by her father into servitude, she leaves servitude at the age of producing the two pubic hairs. If she hasn't produced the pubic hairs, mitziyosa shayach lovia, items she finds go to her father. So our Mishnah that spoke about the Shivcha keeping her found items, what are the circumstances? So now we turn back to the Gemara. We open with a long question. Hai Shivcha Hechi Domi. The Shivcha described in the Mishnah, how are we to understand that? Ida Aisi Shtei Cyrus, if she has produced the two pubic hairs, my bayo gabe, what is she doing by him, by the master? How can she still be classified as a shifcha? Shifcha meaning she's a girl in the required employment by a master. But after producing two pubic hairs, she's no longer a shifcha. V'ida lo isi shte sairus. And if she hasn't produced the two pubic hairs, iise la'av, if the father is alive, the avua havya, the found articles would go to her father. V'ida lese la'av, and if the father died, then she wouldn't be a shifcha. Tepuk b'misa so'av, she would go free from servitude with the father's death. Yomar ish lokish, amu ivriya kona atzmo, b'misa so'av, mirshus ha'adoin mikal v'chomer. Rish Lakish tells us that a Jewish bondmaid acquires her own freedom upon her father's death. She acquires her freedom, Mirshus Ha'adam means from her master's domain, upon her own father's death. Through Kal V'chomer logic, Reish Lakish reaches that conclusion. So if the father is not around, she would be free. The Gemara answers, V'lav itoisiv Reish Lakish. Is it not so that Reish Lakish was refuted? And being that he was refuted, the case of the girl leaving her master's domain through her father's death is simply not true. It's not to be relied upon, so that she would be still in the master's domain at this point where she hasn't produced her the pubic hairs. Even though her father died. So she is therefore called a shifcha, and the Mishnah tells us that she keeps her own found items. The Gemara asks, Nemo mehai nami tevet yufta, from the fact that our Mishnah says that she is a shifcha, shall we not say that then this Mishnah represents an additional refutation to Reish Lakish? Here you have her still a shifcha, even though her father is dead, and it's with that we were able to explain the mitzias shifcha, the found articles she keeps. Lo, no, that we cannot say that from this Mishnah we will also refute Reish Lakish, who had claimed that upon father's death she goes free. Le'olam di'isei la'av. The Mishnah is describing a shifcha whose father is still around. Umay hare hein shelohen. If that be the case, why would the Mishnah describe the shifcha as and her mitzios items she finds hare hein shelohen, which it would imply it's theirs, it's the shifchas, it's the girls. So we explain now, it doesn't mean that. The term harehen shelahen simply is lafuke de rabo. It goes, in fact, to her father. The description of the Mishnah of it being shelahen is simply to the exclusion of it is not the ownership of her master. So that even though she's still working as a shifcha, a Jewish bondmaid by a master, items she finds go, in fact, to her father. And the expression Havarein Shelahen doesn't mean she keeps it, it belongs to her, but rather it's something that does not go to her master. Mesias Ishto, we saw in the Mishnah Shegirsha, Harehen Shelahen. The divorced woman, if she finds something, she keeps it for herself. So the Gemara asks, Girsha, Pshita, if she has been divorced, it's obvious that she keeps the found items. So why do I need a Mishnah to tell me that? The Gemara answers, and you'll notice we have a long answer marking, Hacha b'mayaskinon, the case of our Mishnah is as follows, b'megureshes v'ena megureshes. Literally, she's divorced, but not fully divorced. How can that be? So Rashi explains, if the man had thrown a get to her, and it's not clear whether it landed closer to her or it remained closer to the husband in a public domain, she's classified then as Megureshes, Van Megureshes, type of, say, suffix, a doubtful divorce. Now, we continue in the Gemara. The Omer Rabbi Zeir Omer Shmuel, Komokim Shamlu Chachomim Megureshes, Van Megureshes, wherever the Chachomim declared her status as being that, Megureshes, Van Megureshes, divorced and not divorced, Bailo Chayav Mezunaseha. The husband is still obligated to provide her with her food support. Taimo mai omu rabbonon metzias isha labailo. Why, in general, do we say that an item found by a married woman goes to her husband? Ki hechi delo teheve lo eva. So there should not be a sense of strain between husband and wife. After all, the husband is supporting his wife, and as we explained earlier with regard to a man supporting his children, when a person is supporting someone else, he expects to get something in return. He expects to benefit financially from income, from profits that the one he is supporting happened to realize. So in the case of a regular marriage, a woman who is being supported by her husband, the expectation is that she will deliver to him items that she finds, so as to avoid strains, to avoid eva. So that's true in general. Hacha, in a case where a man threw a divorce document toward his wife, is la eva ve'eva. Here, there's obvious strain and discontent already. And in a case like that, we're not trying to avoid eva. Therefore, let her, the woman who is suffix megureshes, she keeps the found item. And it's understandable that she keeps it, because there's no interest on our part in avoiding eva in a case like that. Hence, as we said already a couple of times, the megureshes woman and the chiddush is, even though he is supporting her, this megureshes v'eino megureshes woman, even though he is supporting her, but the avoidance of eva consideration is unapplicable. Therefore, she keeps the found item. Motza shtore chov. A person finds a bill of collection. This would be a document that would empower someone to collect debts from the one who appears as owing money in the document. So one finds a shtar chov. Im yesh bohen achrayas nechosim, if there is a lien written into the document. In other words, imagine a loan that was extended, and if the borrower defaults on the loan, the lender has a right to collect from those that purchased land from the borrower subsequent to the loan. So if that's the kind of bill of collection that you found, lo yachsir, you do not give it back. Shebeisdin nifroin mehen. Literally, it's a kind of document that the court would enable collection to be made. Ein bohem achrayas nechosim, if there is a bill of collection but there's no lien written into it, yachsir, you can give that back to the lender. She'ein beisdin nifroi mehem, divrei Rabbi Meir. The court does not involve themselves with making collections in cases like that. V'chachomim omrim, the sages disagree, the other rabbis disagree with Rabbi Meir, saying, ben kach u ben kach lo yachsir. Whether there is achrayas nechosim, or even if there is no achrayas nechosim, you do not return the shtar chov, the bill of collection, to the lender. Nisha based in Nifroyim Mehem, because the court will make collection on behalf of the lender. The Mishnah, as we read it, it requires a great amount of explanation. We offered a somewhat literal translation of the Mishnah, but as we go on in the sukkah, you'll see there is much more that will come to the fore. On the side of the Gemara, we've indicated a topic heading. We've also indicated that the topic goes to Daf Yud Dalid Omid Aleph. So we have a rather long topic ahead of us. And even though we're in the context of a Daf Yomi Shir, we might find ourselves spilling over the Daf Yomi quota so as to be able to maintain a continuity of thought and not have to pick it up on another occasion, making it just all the harder to reconstruct the entire flow. So the topic heading, as we indicated, is this issue of finding a bill of collection. The double underline marking that you see in the Gemara is explained under the Mivneh, the structural note, which reads Shlavim Levarer, stages to clarify, Be'ezin Nesibois Dibro HaMishnah. Under what circumstances was the Mishnah speaking? So now we turn to the Gemara, B'mai Askinon. What are we talking about in the Mishnah? E Lema Kishechayev Moide. If you're talking about a case where the borrower admits, I still owe the money. Ki yesh ben achrayas nechosim, when the found shtar happens to have a lien written into it, amai lo yachzir, why not return it to the lender? Ha moideh, the borrower admits he still owes the money. Ve'i kishein chayav moideh, and if you have a borrower denying that he still owes the debt, then kishein chayav, even if the document has no lien written into it, amai yachzir, why give it back to the lender? Granted, without a lien written in it, the lender wouldn't be able to collect from purchasers, from subsequent purchasers, purchasers of land, but from property that the borrower himself is holding onto. That's called B'nei Chori, literally free lands, lands that haven't been sold yet. The lender will be able to collect, so that if the Mishnah is talking about a case of the borrower denying still owing the money, why give a shtar that has no lien in it? Why give it back to the lender? Is he not going to be collecting from someone that's right now denying that he owes anything? Li'olam kishechayev moideh. Our Mishnah is speaking about a case where the borrower admits that he still owes the money, that the shtar has not been paid up yet. Well, if that's the case, then why not give the shtar, the document, the bill of collection, back to the lender? V'hocha hainu taimo. And here in our Mishnah, why is it that we do not give it to the lender? The chayshinon shema kosav luvois benison v'lolova ad tishrei. Just to repeat, our Mishnah made a distinction between a shtar that has a achrayas in it, that has a lien written into it, whereby purchasers would be subject to collection, versus a shtar that doesn't have a lien written into it. We're talking about a case where the borrower concedes, I haven't paid up yet. Why not return the shtar that has achrayas in it? Because we're fearful that maybe there's a date written into the shtar, namely the month of Nisan, which is, we'll say, the first of the months in the series of months of a Jewish calendar. The document reflects a loan that was that was expected to be extended in Nisan, the month of Nisan, for Lo Lova Ad Tishrei, and the actual loan wasn't taken out until a half year later in the month of Tishrei. If you give this document to the lender, the fear on our part is the Osi Lemitraf Lekuchai Shaloi Kedin. The lender will collect properties from purchasers who purchased land from the borrower before he took out the loan. And on what grounds would the lender be doing that? Because of the date written in the shtar, the early date. The shtar was written up, as we said, with the anticipation of the loan being extended in Nisan, but in actuality, it wasn't taken out until Tishrei. And anyone who bought land from this borrower before Tishrei bought land without having to worry about a lender collecting from them. But if we give this found document, the found bill of collection, to the lender, he'll collect from purchasers who bought between Nisan and Tishrei, claiming that I have a document indicating that a loan was taken from me, money was borrowed from me from Nisan, and therefore I have a right to collect from you, the purchasers who bought land from that borrower after the date in my document. The Gemara asks, Ihachi, if this is our concern in the Mishnah here, then kol shtori de'osu l'kamo nechush l'huhachi, then any time a bill of collection comes in front of us, should we not take that in consideration and not enable the lender to collect the money due to him through properties purchased by others? From the borrower, and we know that we enable lenders to collect their loans, whether it be from the borrower himself or from those who purchase from him, if the borrower doesn't have any money. The trapezoid or volcano shape that you just saw is explained on the side under the mivneh kushios. These are questions l'chadei, to sharpen mosai, to clarify or sharpen mosai amrinon chashash ze. When do we express our concern or suspicion of this, namely Kosav Luvos Benisan Velolovana Tishrei? So we've asked the first question, should that not be a source of concern at all times? The Gemara responds, no. Kol Shtori Lo Rei. In general, documents don't have any weakness or point of suspicion in them. Hani Rei, the case of our Mishnah, describes documents that fell, that were found. There's a weakness here. There's room to think that it's not a kosher document. If it was kosher, the owner, the lender, would have been careful with it. So there's room here to raise suspicions, but that is not the case in general, where there was no rei or reusa that arose. Ela hadistan, we raise a question from the following: Kosven shtar leloive afal pi shein mal veimoi. There's a rule that bills of collection, when someone wants to borrow money, the document indicating the loan can be written up on behalf of the borrower, even if the malva, the lender, is not present. L'chatchila hechi kasvino, how can we allow that as a first choice? How can we allow that? The term first choice in Hebrew is l'chatchila. How can we say go right ahead without any reservations and have documents, bills of collection, written up for a lova, even if the malva is not there? Nechu shemo kosav luvos benisan. Should we not worry or concern ourselves that maybe the shtar was written up in anticipation of a loan extended in Nisan, velo lova Tishrei, but in actuality the loan was not given until a half year later, Tishrei. V'yosi l'mitraf l'kuchoi shelo k'din. And having a document like that written up is going to endanger purchasers that shelo k'din, not by letter of the law. They are not subject to being collected from. And yet, if we allow shtoros to be written up, bills of collection to be written up on behalf of those that want to borrow money, even if the malva is not there, who knows, by the time the malva shows up, might be a half year later when the lender shows up with the money. And in the meantime, a bill of collection has been written up with a date in it a half year earlier. Doesn't that subject lekuchos, purchasers, shelo kadin? Omar Ravasi. Here we have a new marking, the triangle that you see. It's featured on the side of our Gemara. Tshuvos vehesberim. These are answers and explanations. La'ha dikotoni. To explain this Tanaic source, Kisvin Shtar Leloive Afalpi She'en Malve Imoi. We allow, as a first choice, to have bills of collection, loan documents written up, even if the Malve, the lender himself, isn't there. Afalpi She'kayim Chashash, even though there is room to suspect, Shemo Kosav Lilvois Benisan Velolova Atishrei, V'yosi L'mitraf L'kuchos, Shelo Kedin. So now the Gemara, how is it that we allow these loan documents to be written up? Omar Rav Asi. So approach number one, and you can see, as we mentioned, we have a triangle and also numbered one. It will be followed later on the upper part of Daf Yud Gimel by Abaye. So Rav Asi says, we continue at the top of Daf Yud Gimel now, B'shtore Hakno'o. So here we have a new idea, a new concept. Shtore Hakno. Rashi at the top says, Bishtore Hakno, Shemakne Loi Nechosov Mehayom. The borrower transfers ownership of his properties immediately from today. From today. In Nisan, Bein Yilve, Bein Lo Yilve, whether he actually borrows or doesn't actually borrow, yigve mehen li'oseizman mehayom. The potential, we'll say, lender is entitled to collect the lands from at that time, meaning at the time that the loan is due, based on properties that the borrower, even if he didn't borrow, that the borrower is in possession of from right now. Well, if that's the case, that it's a shtari haknoa, that the lender was given full rights to the properties of the borrower, so there is no wrongful collection that would be that would take place if this lender would collect from people that purchased subsequent to the date in the document, because those purchasers were in effect buying land from a borrower, a potential borrower, that was actually earmarked or transferred in ownership to the lender before they purchased from the borrower. The Gemara asks, Ihachi, if this be the case, a Rashi, Ihachi, on the second line from the top, the Bishtori Delav Hakno, with regard to Shtoros, bills of collection that don't have this feature to them, indication that the borrower transferred ownership of his properties to the lender, Lo Avidi de Kasvi Elim Kain Ro Havos Hamois. So those kind of Shtoros, loan documents that are not of the Hakno'a variety, those would not be written up unless there was an actual sighting or witnessing of the loan being extended. Well, if that's the case, So now let's go back to our Gemara. Ihachi, masnisin dekotoni, our Mishnah that said, im yesh ben achrayas nechosim lo yachzir, documents, bills of collection that have a lien written into them. Do not return them to the lender. V'ukimno, and we set it up. We explain the Mishnah, kishechayev moideh, we're talking about in our Mishnah, as we explained on the previous Omid of Gemara, why is it not returned? Well, our Mishnah is talking about a case where the borrower admits he hasn't paid up. If that's the case, once again, why not give it back to the lender? Umishum shemo kosav luvois benisan velolova tishrei v'yosi lemitraf lekuchos shelo kadin. The fear is that maybe the bill of collection was written up in Nisan, but the loan wasn't extended until Tishrei, and that will endanger purchasers in a non-legal fashion. Amai lo yachzir will still raise the question, why should the loan documents not be returned to the lender? Nechsi, let us evaluate, let us investigate, let us look into it. If the found document was the haknoa variety, then you're not endangering the lukuchos, hashabid le nafshei. The borrower bound himself and his property to the lender. The subsequent purchasers are not being endangered shelo kadin under circumstances like that. E b'shtar delo hakno, and if it's a document that's not of the hakno variety, well then leko lemechash, there's still nothing to worry about. We'll say a false collection. If you were to give it back to the lender, deho amris, but we already said ki leko malve bahade lo kasvino, and if the malve is not around, we wouldn't write it up. We spoke about writing up documents for borrowers if the lender is not around. That is only because you're dealing with shtari haknoa. But if it's of the non-haknoa variety, bills of collection would not be written up unless there was an actual witnessing of a loan, as we saw before in the Rashi. The Gemara answers. We have to answer for our Mishnah. Omar Le Ravasi. Now Ravasi, I just want to point out, was the name we had in the triangle at the bottom of Yud Beis Amid Beis. So Ravasi says, Afagav the story the lav hakno, even though when you're dealing with the non hakno variety loan documents, ki leko malva bade lo kasvinon, as a rule of thumb, if the malva wasn't there and there wasn't an actual witnessing of the loan, it wouldn't have been written up. Masnisen, with regard to our Mishnah, where you saw refraining from returning it to the lender, Kevon de Nofal, since you're dealing with it fell. The shtar fell and was found lying around. Isra lay. There is a weakness in it. There's a room for suspicion. V'chayshinon, and we suspect, dilma ikri v'kosov. Maybe it just so happened that they wrote up a loan document without the malva being there, without our having actually seen the loan take place. And because of that, we're not going to give the shtar that has in it achrayas nechosim. We're not going to give it back to the lender because maybe, as we said, it was done. The document, the loan document, was in fact prepared under wrongful circumstances. So as far as our Mishnah is concerned, a shtar sheish b'achrayas nechosim, that's of a non-hakno'o variety, by giving the the loan document back to the lender, you would be endangering the Lukuchos, subsequent purchasers, who bought after Nisan, the date written in the Shtar, but the loan wasn't actually extended until Tishrei, and giving it back to the lender would enable him to wrongfully collect from purchasers who purchased before the actual loan was taken. The triangle that you see introduces Abaye, the second approach to explain our Mishnah. Let me make a correction. A second approach to explain the Tanaic source that says Kisvin Shtar Leloy V'Afal Pisha Ein Mal Ve'Imoy. So Abaye says that which we allow L'Chadchila, a loan document to be written up for a borrower, even if the malve is not there. So Abaye says, Edov b'chasumov zochin lo, ve'afilu shtore delav hakno'o. And this is the point of difference between Rav Asi and Abaye, that as far as Abaye is concerned, the shtar that's written up, even if the lender is not present, and we don't see the actual loan, how do we allow that to take place? Are we not endangering the Lekuchos, those people who bought between Nisan and Tishrei, and raising the suspicion that the date in the document precedes the time of the actual loan? Are we not endangering the purchasers? So Abaye says we're not endangering the purchasers because the witnesses, by signing the document for the borrower, through their signature, they enable the lender at that point to have a claim on the borrower's properties. So even without a formal haknah, shtar haknah, without the formal granting of ownership of borrower properties to the lender, by the mere fact that witnesses signed a loan document, through their signing it, they enable the lender to have a claim on the borrower's properties. As you can see, we have a couple of lines in brackets. There's a starred note on the side. Achrei ha-sogrim ha-gemara makshe mimakuros al haklal shel Abaye. After the brackets, the Gemara will raise questions on Abaye from Tanaic sources. B'soch ha-sogrim ha-gemara mevia hezber lama lama Abaye pirei shalchi v'lo kamo ravasi. Within the brackets, the Gemara will deal with the question of why did Abaye explain what he did, a departure from Rav Asi's approach. So now we continue with the bracketed section. Mishum de kashio lei, it was a source of trouble, we'll say, of understanding for Abaye. Came on the amris b'shtori de lav hakno ki lese lemalve bahadei lo kasvinon. Since you said that in the non-hakno'o variety shtar, when the malve is not present, when you don't see the actual loan, such a document would not be written up, leko lemechash de'ikri v'kosuv. There is no reason to worry about, since it fell, such a document, a shtar with achrayas nechosim, would have been written up with the malve not there. So there's no reason to concern yourself with that which Rav Asi concerned himself with. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a new geometric form, a house shape, under our Mivne heading on the side of the Gemara. In the margin, we've indicated these are Kushios al Tshuvas Abaye, questions that are raised against the Hesber, the explanation of Abaye for the source that spoke of Kaisvin the Loiva for Pishay Malvi Imoi, where Abaye explained it as the aid of Bechasumov Zachin Loi. The Royin Mikama Makurs, we will see from several sources, the Bechozois, that even though Adov Bechasumov supposedly Zachin Lo, Lo Machzir and Shtoros Lebalein, we still don't return the documents to their owners. So now we turn to the Gemara. V'ela ha'disnan. We have the following source. Motzo gite noshim, a person, let us say, found a divorce document. V'shichuri avodim, or a document in which we see a slave was freed by his owner. Daitiki, these are wills where a shivmeira, a person deathly ill, issues his desire and will of how his property should be distributed. Matona, a document indicating a gift was given. Veshovarim, these are receipts that debts were paid up. So if any of these are found, hare ze lo yachzir, do not return them. Shema kesuvim hoyu v'nimachlem shalolidnam. The fear is that maybe they were written up, but the owner of it, or the one who issued the writing, decided not to give them. Take, for example, the case of Matana, a document in which someone indicated his desire to give a gift of property to someone. Maybe he had written up such a document, but decided not to give it. So we're not going to then give the Shtar Matana to the receiver. V'chinimla chalei mayhave. So if Abaye is correct, what difference does it make if the one who wrote it up had a change of mind? The nimlach means a change of mind. The whole amris, but did you not say Adov b'chasumov zochin lo, that through the signing of the document, that itself grants the rights to the receiver? So in the case of these documents, focusing, for example, on the matona, on the document involving a gift, is it not as good as if the gift was already given by the mere fact that the document was signed? So why not give it back? Now, so we see here that we don't seem to follow Abaye's approach. The Gemara says, "Hani mili hecha de kamatu liode." The rule of Abaye that Adov b'chasumov zochen lo is true when the document reached its destination. But where the document did not reach its destination, so we don't say Adov Bechasumov Zochen Lo. So that Abaye's Hesper of Adov Bechasumov Zochen Lo had relevance to the source in which we were taught Kisvin Laloi Ve'afo Pishen Mal Ve'imo. The initial writing up of the loan document could very well have taken place when the even if the malva was not there, the lender was not there, but eventually that document is given to the lender. And as such, the lender gains rights to the properties of the lover from the time that the witnesses signed the document initially. This source, where we say the document is not given to the receiver, that's because it might never have reached the hands of the receiver for us to be able to say Adov b'chasumov zochin lo. We continue. Elo masnisin dikotoni. Our Mishnah said, Motzo Shtorei Choliv, Im Yesh Bohen Achrayes Nechosim Lo Yachsir. Someone found loan documents. If there is a lien written into them, then do not give it back to the lender. V'ukimna, and we established this Mishnah. We established the Mishnah back on Yud Beis Amud Beis. You notice we have a star, which you can refer back to Yud Beis Amud Beis, to the parallel star. And we set up the Mishnah as Kishechayav Moida. The case was where the borrower admitted he had not paid up. Why did we not return? Why does the Mishnah say do not return the loan document to the lender? Umishum Shema Kosav Luvois Benison Velo Lova Ad Tishrei. The fear is that the date in the document might have been a half a year earlier than the loan. It was written in Nisan, and the actual loan didn't take place. Until Tishrei, and that would endanger the purchasers that purchased from the borrower between Nisan and Tishrei. Bishlamo Laravasi, the Omar Bishtori Aknaisa, as far as Ravasi is concerned, who explained the Mishnah of Kaisman Shtar Leloive Afopi She'ein Malve Imo as referring to Shtore Aknaisa. That was the Shtar referred to at the very top of this Omid, Shtore Hakno, where the Malve is entitled in an explicit fashion to ownership of the Love's properties. Muki law, so Rav Asi will establish our Mishnah, as we saw earlier, Bishtore Delav Aknaisa, Uchidam Rinon. The Mishnah that spoke about the loan documents that were found and a lien having been written in them is reason for us not to give it back to the lender because of the fear that that it may have been written up, even though the actual loan was not witnessed, and it was written early with the Nisan date in it. And as we explained before, since there was the Reusa of it having been lost and then found, we're afraid that things that the Shtar, even though it's not Aknaisan, we said in general, they would not be written up unless the Malve was present. Maybe it was written even without the loan having been seen with the early date and all of the dangers that the purchasers would be exposed to. And hence we don't return the Shtar to the lender, as we saw in the Mishnah. That all followed from Rav Asi's approach, and as we said, we can make sense of the Mishnah of Kisvin Shtar Lelova Afal Bishen Malve Imo, and at the same time explain why in the Mishnah we do not return the Shtar to the lender. Elol Abaye Domar, but according to Abaye, who explained the Mishnah of Kisvin Shtar Lelova Afal Bishen Malve Imo through concept of Edov b'chasum of Zochenlo, that as soon as the document is signed by witnesses, the Malva gains rights to the Lova's properties. My Ikal LeMeimar, why, according to our Mishnah, is the loan document not returned to the Malva, to the lender? Once you say Edov b'chasum of Zochenlo, the lender has rights to the borrower's properties, and you're not endangering the purchasers. Omar Loch Abaye, Masnisin Hainu Taimo. The reason for the Mishnah is the Chayish Lepironu Kununya. We're afraid that maybe the loan document, the loan was already paid up, and if you give it back to the lender, there might have been a scheme. Kinunya is a term referring to a scheme that they, the two of them, the Malva and the Lova, arranged between them that the lender would then go to the purchasers of the from the purchased property from the lender, seizing their properties that they purchased from the borrower on the grounds that he has a document with a lien written in it. So we're choshish for foul play. And that's how Abaye explains the Mishnah. Ule Shmuel diomar loy chashinon lepiron ule kinunya mai kolameimar. According to Shmuel, that doesn't accept the suspicions that Abaye raised. That we don't consider that. So ha nicha isavar lo kiravasi diomar b'shtori hakno. Then we can explain the Mishnah if Shmuel adopts Rav Asi's approach that explained the Tanaic source of Kaisvin Shtar Leloiva Fabishe Malva Imo as being Shtore Hakno, Muki Lo Lemasnisin Bishtore the Lav Hakno. He will set up our Mishnah as referring to Shtaros where there was no Hakno in it. And as we explained earlier, through Rav Asi, that you would then be subjecting the purchasers to danger. Elo, isovar ke'abaye, if however Shmuel follows Abaye's approach, diomar edov b'chasumov zochen lo, mai iko lememar. Bearing in mind, once again, Shmuel is not choshesh for foul play. Shmuel were to accept Abaye's idea of Adolf b'chasum of Zochenlov, that once a loan document is signed by witnesses, that entitles the lender to the properties of the Love, and there's no suspicion of foul play, so you're not endangering the any purchasers. Why then, according to our Mishnah, the loan documents with liens in them that are found, would they not be returned to the lender? So the Gemara answers, Shmuel Muki Lemasnisin. Shmuel will set up our Mishnah Kishain Chayav Moideh. This, by the way, is in contrast to the approach that we saw back on Yud Beis Amud Beis, where the borrower admits he didn't pay back. Here, Shmuel says the Mishnah is talking about a case where the borrower does not admit. He claims that he is exempt. He does that. He's exempt from having to pay up the loan, namely that he already paid it up. Well, ihachi, if the Mishnah is talking about a case where ein chayav moide, where the borrower is not admitting that he still owes, but rather denies owing the money, then ki ein bohen achrayas nechosim amai achsir. According to our Mishnah, shtaros, loan documents that don't have liens in them, why does the Mishnah give license to returning that to the lender? Why should you return it to the lender? Nehida lo gavi min mishabdi, granted that without a lien in the document, the lender is not entitled to collect from mishubodim, from purchased properties. Those properties purchased from the borrower after the loan. Mipnei chori migvegavi, the lender nevertheless is able to collect from properties currently held by the borrower. But if the Mishnah is talking about a case where the borrower is denying owing the money, why does the Mishnah allow the return of shtaros that have no liens in them to be returned to the lender? The Gemara answers, Shmuel litame. Shmuel, it would be consistent with what he has said elsewhere. The Omar Shmuel, the house marking that you see here will have benefit for the Gemara later on Omid Beis. So Shmuel is consistent with what he has said as elsewhere. Omer hoya Rabbi Meir, shtar choiv she'en bo achrayas nechosim, a loan document that doesn't have a lien written in it, ein gaiva loy mi mishavdi v'loy mi b'nei chori. Notice we dashed under the line v'lo mi b'nei chori, according to Rabbi Meir. A document that has no lien written in it is practically speaking useless. The lender will not be able to collect even from the borrower himself. Well, if the lender isn't going to be able to collect with it, amai yachsir, why does the Mishnah say, well, give it back to the malveh? Omer Rabbi Nosson bar Hoshaya lo tzura pi tzluchisa shel malveh. He'll be able to use it as a bottle stopper, as the lender will crumple up the paper and stuff it in a bottle. Or, if you prefer, he'll be able to use it to wrap his fish in it. Gemara asks, V'nahadri lehu l'loive lo tzura pi tzluchisa shel loive. Well, if you're talking about using a document that's useless for collection, why not then return it to the lova, to the borrower, to use it for his bottle stopper? The Gemara answers, loive hu, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, the Omar lo hoyu dvera me'olam. The lova is denying owing the money altogether. According to this, it would appear then that the borrower is saying, I never took the loan out. So that when we said a few lines before that Shmuel sets up the Mishnah of Ein Chayav Moideh, the borrower is simply, he's not admitting to having written up the shtar. He's claiming that the shtar is a forgery. So, of course, you're not going to give the shtar back to him. So what we have seen in the last section of Gemara, we had numbered to the side of the Gemara text on the lower part of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, numbers 1 through 3. So we saw the Hesberim of Rav Asi, Abaye, and Shmuel, why, according to our Mishnah, if one finds loan documents that have liens in them, that they are not to be returned. Rav Asi gave us, we saw his approach, that it may have been, the document may have been written up without having actually witnessed the loan, and it's a shtar that's not aknaisa, and you would be endangering the purchasers with that by having the possibility of it being written up in Nisan and the loan not actually having been extended till Tishrei. Abaye will tell you that we don't return the found loan documents because of the chashash of Piron and Kenunya, the chashash of foul play, wrongfully collecting from purchasers a loan that was already paid up beforehand. And Shmuel will explain that we're not going to return the loan document to the lender because we're dealing with a scenario where the borrower denies having written up the shtar altogether, that the whole shtar is a forgery. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.